Today on ENR's Critical Path podcast, we talk to a multifaceted CEO who has overseen the recent unprecedented accomplishment of merging five companies into one, aimed at making a world a better place. Jerry Salonti has completed many dozens of assignments that varied in size, complexity, geography, and duration. His work has spanned from helping individual business units or groups to entire companies, ranging in size from less than $10 million to over $1 billion in annual revenue. He previously served as the chairman of the board and CEO of the Kleinfelder Group. This is an exec talk. I'm Eileen Cho, senior transportation editor for Engineering News Record. Jerry, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
Yeah, we go back quite a ways. I remember going to Kleinfelder's fabulous symposiums every February, I guess, in Colorado, and being really blown away by the, you know, over the proceedings that you oversaw. Do you ever miss those?
You know, I do. You know, if I had to pick two or three things, you know, people come first to the top of my list, and that's probably a close second. And maybe it's because it's so much related to people. I used to say that the investment we were making, you know, and it was about training and professional development. So don't get me wrong here. That's really important. However, I thought the real power in those forums that we did, we call them conferences, leadership and professional development conferences, was really in the connection, the collaboration, the trust and team building that was built, and all the personal relationships that get built in those things. And I think those actually transcended into us being able to serve large clients and national and global, a global business, and really helped knit the company together, so to speak.
So obviously the more recent exciting news is that you've successfully managed to merge five different service groups into Verdantis: Roundtable Capital Partners, Holland Associates, Duffield Associates, HSW Consulting, Geo Insight, and Alden Research Laboratory. How did you get this going? How did that happen? Was it easy?
I don't know if you want the long story or the short story here.
Maybe the short story.
I'll give you the shortened version. I was happily, after my tenure at Kleinfelder, doing some consulting and sitting on boards of directors, and RTC Partners, which is our private equity sponsor, came along. And even though I had been approached by a number of other companies, including private equity sponsors in the past, their story resonated with me. And I always said that when I semi-retired from Kleinfelder, that if I had the chance to build something from scratch with a clean sheet of paper, that I could be lured into getting back into things in a big way. And this was that opportunity. So we started, they had already been, had some discussions, had already been talking to Holland Associates, which was the start of this, what we were calling a platform. Now it's a company as Verdantis. And we started with Holland Associates, and then, using industry connections and professional relationships, we've been able to acquire four additional firms on top of that. And it's been an exciting, I think we're at about 17 months now.
And, you know, what does Verdantis aim to do? I know there's this sort of making the world a better place, but can you kind of go into some specifics of the roles it can play?
Yes. I'd start with, the thesis that RTC came to me with, which was, you know, to take this fragmented industry, which we have, and build a national and ultimately a global provider of consulting services in the environmental space. And I looked at that and expanded it a bit. And I use the word often, the environment, because when you really think about it, you have a lot of aspects to that. You have obviously the sciences and the environmental planning and permitting that go long before a project is is really even designed. And you have hazardous waste, which is cleaning up, you know, a lot of the past sins, or environmental management, which is a part of that, and continuing to help corporations and government, you know, handle environmental issues that they may have. However, then it really goes into other areas like water resources and, you know, water supply and water and resiliency of water resource facilities and water and wastewater treatment, and on and on and on. So if you really think of it from its entirety, our scope is really focused on anything that touches the environment, whether it's in the air, in the water, on the ground, and whether it's finding clean sources of water, and especially in this country where we have a number of regions that desperately need more water, one that I sit in actually, and or it's treating water, cleaning up past sins of industry and the government, or being proactive about being good stewards, and whatever is being constructed, you have an eye towards you know, green construction. So there is a bit of a nexus also with infrastructure, I guess, last but not least, because a lot of the focus around the environment relies on, you know, the construction of infrastructure, whether it be coastlines or waterways or transport. It's all related to the environment, which then pulls you finally into energy and looking for, you know, clean alternatives for producing energy for our country and the globe, actually.
Mm-hmm. So I take it this has been identified by you and your colleagues as one of the most significant concerns for the AEC industry?
It is. I would say that from a concern standpoint, the concern for the industry is really about people, talent. And I think if I had to put a top 10 list together, you know, first and foremost would be talent. And it is just getting increasingly difficult with companies that tend to trade employees, and the war for talent, and what we have to do with keeping good people and keeping people focused and engaged in our industry and not going to other industries. So that's that's probably the biggest significant challenge. I think the significant opportunity is those areas that affect the environment. And that's one reason why RTC selected this particular space, because we have some pretty strong tailwinds. In fact, I look back on my whole career, and if I was a young professional coming out of an engineering or science or planning type school curriculum, I would look at what is going on in the world and I'd say, well, there is just so many strong tailwinds. When you look at you know, climate change and our transition from, you know, fossil fuels to cleaner energy sources, sustainability, whether it's in the building, outside the building, or how we do things and being good stewards of our environment. There's been a shift from this regulatory pressure, which still exists, don't get me wrong, but there's been a shift from regulatory pressures for corporate and government to do the right thing, to social pressure, which actually creates an additional tailwind that's favorable to our business. So when you really look at all of those, and then that intersection again with aging infrastructure, whether it be energy or transportation infrastructure, there's that nexus point there that it just screams of strong tailwinds. And I say that's the largest opportunity for the industry.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, I've never personally heard, not that I'm a big expert in this space, but five companies, each of which have more than 100 employees, and you got them all together in 16 months. Would you say that might be a record?
It might be. I mean, certainly the very large companies that, you know, are continually acquiring companies can acquire, you know, two, three, four, five companies in a year or more.
That's true.
They certainly have the capacity to do that. But I think what's unique here is that I've checked with a number of colleagues across many companies and also with some professional consulting groups. And I think what's unique here is that these were five equally sized companies, and they were actually ranged from about 60 employees to about 100 and just under 150. And so they're equally sized. And when you get to those size of companies, you don't have the systems in place. A lot of times whether it's, sales or quality is really done by intuition and gut feel and kind of under the leadership of a owner founder. And you don't have these, refined and more dedicated processes and procedures. And so, you're starting at a level where it's almost like creating a company from scratch. And so now, and then there are some systems where they might be in the five companies, they might have been doing things three or four different ways. And so to pull all that together in that rapid of fashion, and again, whether it's under processes or policies or organizational structure or sales and marketing or benefits, it's IT systems, website, intranet site, on and on and on, to pull all that together in that fast a fashion and to get everybody to be engaged in that and having virtually zero pushback. I think I had never heard of it in my four decades in the business.
Mm. I mean, any tips to, other business people about how to, what kind of processes keeps everyone aligned and not pushing back?
Well, it may start, two things on that. First, it may start with do you integrate or not? There are even some very large companies that make acquisitions and don't integrate. And I would say this is more like merging together and rather than integrating, because we had no one single company that was the sponsor and had everything in place. And so you got to make the first decision. Do you just operate these five companies or do you take your time and do it over 3 years, or do you rip off the Band-Aid? And for better or worse, and I will have to say that at some points during this last year, I would question the decision, but, come the start of last year, I said, we need to get through this process fast as possible because it's so distracting, it's so disruptive, and it also, first and foremost, it doesn't allow you to take advantage of the scale, in driving growth and having people collaborate and using all the resources of all of these companies across. And if you're operating as three or four or five different companies, it's you lose out on that great potential of unlocking that value and also excitement amongst the organization. So the choice was to rip off the Band-Aid and to get to kind of like John Kennedy did with the man on the moon. We are going to put a man on the moon, not saying how you're going to get there. And so my approach was to say we need to be one company by January of this year. And so we basically were in this sprint to get it all done. And it was disruptive and distracting. So how do you do it? It's a lot of communication. We used a lot of different ways to engage our folks with an engagement study, which a survey that we did that, wasn't necessarily perfect, perfect results, but that's what you want. You want to find those areas of opportunity, focus groups and pulse polls. And we took our top two levels of leadership and got together and had a number of sessions. I think it was three sessions in total to develop a shared vision and passion and a set of shared values that was shared amongst all the firms and then also then begin to put together a more unified strategic plan that, you know, that had the fingerprints of everybody on it. And so it's just a lot of work and a lot of communication. And in that, you have to build trust, because if you don't have trust, none of this will work.
Of course.
Any company for anything.
How did you come up with the name for Dantas?
Oh, that's our director of communication, Terry Reynolds, can speak to this better than I can, I'm sure. Well, we didn't want to necessarily use a legacy name if it was named after a founder of a company. And we were trying to shy away from, you know, using initials and the alphabet soup approach is, pardon my slang, but that's the approach when you have a number of letters, which is usually a consolidation of a group of companies that were put together. And we couldn't come up with a creative acronym out of the five companies that we had. So we wanted to come up with something fresh and unique. So that was really the overarching theme. And then setting under that, we wanted to make sure that we could get a URL that was clean, that we wouldn't have to have an additional word or two or a bunch of letters in there, like ink, to make a really nice clean URL. And so those were two overarching goals. And the third was to pick a name that reflected what we're trying to do. And, you know, the passion that we've rested on is to make the world a better place. Mm-hmm. And we're doing it from the standpoint of the environment. And so we went on a journey using some outside help and using, again, focus groups and polling to see what would resonate and is consistent with the values and the vision and the passion that we came up with, and the suite of services that we provide, which is focused, you know, on the environment. And so with that, we came up with a list of, well, I don't know, 8 or 10 names, and through, again, a series of focus groups, including some outside client polling and using future high school students that will be future professionals. We narrowed it down and chose Verdantis. Verdant is green in Latin, and when you put the AS on it, it means greenness.
Uh-huh.
And so it reflects, we believe it's a name that reflects, again, our vision, our passion, our values, and what we do, and all wrapped up into one. Mm-hmm. And that's how we came up with it.
Nice. Yes, when I think of the word verdant, I think of verdant meadows and lushness and greening of things. So sounds appropriate to me.
And when I first told my part Hispanic wife Verdantis, she goes, "Oh, Verdantis." She says, "Verde, that must mean green." Picking up verde from, which is Latin, is the root of most or all languages, right?
Pretty much. I took high school Latin and have benefited from it ever since. So now you formed this company. What's the situation with clients? Do you have any clients yet or big jobs that are coming up?
So we're starting to see, and that's why, you know, the rip off the Band-Aid and the race to come together as one company, because it's a lot tougher to convince a client that, oh, well, we're the same company over here. It's just a different name. And you know, you're not even on the same project accounting system. And so from a project management standpoint, it's tough, and on and on and on. So that was important to come up with a common brand, but also, you know, put all of our systems and our approach to how we develop business and so on and so forth together. You know, we've identified, I believe it's eight practice areas, which are really just a grouping of technical disciplines that we're focused on, and seven market sectors, client end user market sectors. And that's a key, and we're just installing a key client program. And those types of pieces of the organizational structure will help you know, drive long-term organic growth and also collaboration and sharing of resources across the organization. So we have just been starting to see, we had early on had some nice smaller wins. However, in the last, I would say 90 days, we've seen a very large ramp up in, as we've gotten the practice groups and the market sectors organized and the key client program in place, we're seeing a lot more recognition. Folks in the various legacy companies, which are now geographic areas of the company, you know, have recognized, oh, I have this client and they do work over here. And so we're starting to see a huge uptake in clients taking us to new places, winning clients that wouldn't necessarily give us a look when we, you know, when we had a 100-person company versus approaching 500-person company and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm. And your private equity partner, RTC Capital Partners, is there anything kind of unique or of note about their investment approach?
Yes, I think there's several things that are unique about them. And in fact, frankly, it's what attracted me to take this on. Clearly, they've studied, you know, private equity in the past was always afraid of a service business, whether it be, you know, professionals or other types of services, because, you know, it's so people focused and reliant, you know, it's not based on inventory or equipment and production. And so it's so people focused. And so RTC, the two general partners that formed this group, it did a lot of homework and understanding the service industry as a whole, and in particularly the AEC area. And they quickly learned and recognized that, you know, that this is a real people business. And in this business, you know, we say that there are assets. So you've probably heard that saying before. And they go home at night, or if they leave, they can take that client portfolio with them. And so they quickly recognized that, you know, people was a key, and it's not about coming in and slashing expenses and doing things like that. And I will say that, you know, some 16, 17 months later, they've been true to their word. They have really focused on the people equation. You know, some of our metrics at the top are based on things like retention and employee development. They pushed us to, you know, to have a focus or a central theme around people in our company going forward. So I would say that's the first reason that I think that the RTC is somewhat unique. I think private equity has gotten better with understanding the industry, but RTC does this very well. They also believe in the value of full integration. There are differences, again, like with the approach with even some of the larger companies that aren't private equity backed, but there's also that difference in private equity companies where they might buy two or three companies all focused in different aspects of the environment and just hold them apart. And they believe that what we just did with this integration, you know, unlocks that value, as I said, and ends up paying off dividends with everything from retention, because you're providing career opportunities for people and on, all those internal things, but it unlocks that organic growth, and which results in some value creation. So they really believe in full integration. And then the third is most private equity companies do want to see the selling company roll over their equity. I would say that RTC is more on the generous side, because they realize that the going forward organization, if you have skin in the game, that you're going to be much more motivated to do the right thing and to perform at high levels. And what's really unique about RTC is they have an ongoing, in fact, we just got done with this in the last week. They have an ongoing, what we're calling the Verdantis Equity Purchase Program, where we're offering high performers who weren't shareholders in their previous companies and weren't given the opportunity to roll over some of their equity or shares into this business, we're giving them the opportunity to now buy in or we have emerging leaders that are coming up through the ranks, and we know that they're rock stars and going to be future rock stars. And so we give them an opportunity to buy shares in the business. And we just got done with, asking over 24 individuals, some of which were existing equity owners that own smaller amounts. And we thought that they may have an interest in purchasing more. And a dozen and a half plus to two dozen, somewhere in between there, were new people, emerging leaders, high performers that were offering a chance to participate in the value creation. And so, having worked in the employee ownership model for most of my career, except for my board experience, I would say that this is very employee ownership-like. It's got a similar feel. And I think it comes from especially the first difference that I mentioned, which is the focus on people. And the third, the ongoing recognition that you want to recognize people and allow them to participate in the success of the company.
Great. Well, it sounds like you're being true to the spirit of the name of your company, where you're trying to make employees flourish as well as.
That's right. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. We looked at each one of those different aspects. Again, passion, vision, values, and what we're trying to achieve internally and externally, and the services we provide. You're right. It speaks to that.
Well, thanks, Jerry. Congratulations on this new venture. And you would have thought you'd have just completely retired because you had such a long career, but here you are.
New horizons.
Well, I wish you luck moving forward and hope you guys maybe even have another symposium that I can visit. So
we'll try to do something. We're doing some things to stimulate that engagement of our people, both vertically and horizontally across the company. So who knows, we may be there.
All right. Thanks, Jerry.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
This has been another ENR Exec Talk. I'm Eileen Cho. To hear more podcasts, go to enr.com/podcasts, or you can also follow us on Apple or Spotify. Thanks for listening.